Moving on to item four, which is basically why we're here, discussion and possible action on the report from the technical consultant. Ryan, if you want to get us going.
Yes, good morning, everybody. You can go to the next slide. So we got several things to talk about. We're trying to finish up all these tasks before the submittal of the tech memo in January. But most of this stuff you've already seen, so it shouldn't be anything new, and hopefully we can get through it pretty quickly. But tasks 2A, we've made some updates to the flood quilt and wanted to show you all the results of the flood exposure analysis that we did. The needs analysis was following task 2A, and that's looking at flood gaps and flood risk along in our region. And so Nick is going to cover that. Goals, we'll need y'all's approval on our regional goals. Rachel Hurl will cover that. And then the task 4A FMX identification, just briefly give y'all an update on that. And then task 4C, I wanted to lay out, we had to revise our schedule for the technical memorandum, and I wanted to kind of lay out the game plan for that and the plan of attack for that item. So if you can go. And one more slide. Just as far as general updates, update on the schedule, you can see we're closing out all these different tasks except for task 2B. We're nearly finishing that. We had some delays with the flood quilt, and I'll explain that in the following slides, but we're mostly finishing out this first phase of regional flood planning, which is culminating in this tech memo. You can see we plan to submit the draft memo for y'all to review to get approval at the next month's meeting in December so that we can submit the tech memo in January. Next year, we will be focusing on performing FMEs. So that will be the bulk of our work next year. And just so y'all know, we'll probably end up going to bi-monthly meetings or something like that. We won't need to be meeting nearly as often. So you can go to the next slide. So kind of I wanted to give an update on task 2A. We're closing this out. You can go to the next slide. One of the major changes, we've had just tons of discussion on this flood quilt. Since our last meeting, we had the Texas Water Development Board come back and specifically request that we actually include FEMA Zone AE in our flood quilt. Now, we were originally not going to include Zone AE because we thought the data that we had was included the latest data, latest methods and approaches. We just thought the modeling that we had was just more accurate in most cases than the FEMA Zone AE. The development board has concern about there being a discrepancy, I guess, between what the FEMA has versus what our flood quilt has, especially with concerns about some of the recent events that happened in the state. They want there to be some congruency between our flood quilt and what FEMA is showing. So they asked if we could put FEMA on top of our flood quilt. And after a bunch of discussion back and forth and looking through the guidance, we ended up just agreeing that it wouldn't hurt. If anything, it just makes our flood quilt a little bit more conservative to have FEMA, the FEMA Zone AE layer thrown on top of our flood quilt. So I went ahead and made that to keep the schedule moving forward. Since we have some tight deadlines, we went ahead and made the decision to go and include the Zone AE in our flood quilt, and it has since been updated to reflect that. So an example that we have on the images on the right, you can see the blue is the flood on the top image was our old flood quilt. You can see in some areas when we put FEMA AE in, it's slightly whiter. And so that filled in some of these areas that didn't show flood risk. We did a review over the whole region. For the most part, Zone AE, because it's using old rainfall, pre-Atlas 14, for the most part, the FEMA is smaller than our flood quilt. And in the areas where it's wider, it's not very significant. You can kind of see this is a pretty good demonstration of how it changed our flood quilt. This is pretty normal throughout the whole region. So we went ahead and did that and made that decision. If there's no qualms or issues with that, then we'll just proceed with that approach, and we will have that updated in our, we will have that, our approach updated and reflected in the tech memo.
I think decision is maybe a little bit inaccurate. We made the adjustment. We didn't have a choice.
Right.
This is what Water Development Board told us we could do after many offline debates. So it wasn't like this or that, and Ryan made a decision. The only decision was go ahead and start what we have to do now instead of waiting to update the group, yeah, because we were already behind.
Right.
And I see some hands raised. I think Sujith was first.
Ryan, the question I have is, it's only AE. What, are we doing the same with Zone A too?
No, we didn't. We didn't do Zone A. We got that clarification from the development board. That's just the studied AE and VE that we used.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. You can correct me if I'm misspeaking, Jenna.
No, that's correct. Yeah.
Mark?
Yeah, just looking at your exhibit in the upper right-hand corner of the exhibits, there's some areas that don't appear in the top exhibit to be encompassed by either the blue or the pink. But then when you go down to the lower exhibit, more areas included in the blue area, even though it's not even in the blue or pink above. I'm not understanding how that happened. Is that just an error?
Only error in my figure.
You know, with the purple, is that from?
I was using pieces of FEMA, so there's probably another piece that I didn't pull in appropriately to show that. But I can revise that figure. We can send it out.
Did you hear that, Mark?
Yes, thank you.
Do you want a revised figure for this area?
I think more just conceptually. It's the two things together, right? When making this graphic, maybe y'all left out a piece, but in no case should there be any white that's independently flipping, correct?
That's right.
No. Okay. Charlotte.
Just so I understand what I'm looking at on the flood quilt online, Ryan, so this has already been incorporated. So when I'm looking at the NFHL detailed mapping, that's everything pulled in already that we agreed we had, or that we were told we had to pull in. Is that correct? It's already been incorporated in the flood quilt?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. Can you clarify on the flood quilt, looking at all the layers? I think I understand from our previous discussions what everything is, but there's one layer that's just called a flood prone area, and it doesn't necessarily list, and this is on the pull down of the flood hazard data source layering. What is the source for that? Because it's different than the community submitted data.
Can you go to the next slide? And then Jenna, maybe remind me on the flood prone areas. That was...
Yes. The flood prone areas are not associated with a particular design event. So it's not 1% annual chance or 10%. It's additional areas. So one of those big data sets is like the National Levee Database of flood prone areas, or areas where communities came back and said, hey, we don't have a model showing this, but we know this area is prone to flooding. So we won't use it when we're quantifying structures at 1% annual chance risk, but we will use it as other areas potentially prone to flooding. We just don't know exactly how often.
Okay, thank you for that.
That's pulled together.
Yeah, thanks, Jenna. So this is what you're referring to, and we went through and updated the flood quilt on the website. That includes the 10%, 1%, and 0.2% annual chance event. So that's all up there, and you can toggle them on and off. You can see it on the bottom right, flood hazard dash the return event. So those are all toggleable. And then above that, we also incorporated this data source. So you can see specific, and this is the data that's used to develop the flood quilt for the 1% event. And so it just kind of gives you a spatial understanding of how all this stuff was meshed together. So you can see it's a little bit crazy, but that's what we had to do. And so we have different color codes based off of the data source. So that's up there for your review, and gives everyone a better understanding of what we used where at this point. So
it does look busy, but I appreciate making the effort. I think it's very helpful to know the source of the data. And then if a community or some individual has a particular concern, it'll also just make it quicker and easier to have that conversation of why am I shown in the green, for example, and what does that mean, right? So
right.
I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. So if there is no questions on that, I'm going to hand it over to Nick, who I thought I saw on the call.
He's bottom right.
Okay. So Nick, I'll give it over to you. Oh, yeah, there he is.
Yeah, thank you, Ryan. So yeah, like Ryan was mentioning, once we we're able to consider that existing flood hazard layer final. We then proceeded to performing the exposure and vulnerability analysis, where we're identifying who and what might be harmed within the region by taking various data sets, including buildings and roadways, and intersecting that with the flood hazard layer. Next slide, please. So on the right side of this slide, we're showing the change in number of buildings in flood hazard areas, comparing cycle one to cycle two. And so in general, the flood exposure across the region increased significantly, and this is primarily driven by our inclusion of pluvial floodplain mapping, which is, you know, also referred to as like the local or urban flood risk. And so we had areas in cycle one, urban areas that were covered only by FEMA data that are now supplemented with this Fathom data that also includes pluvial mapping. And also we had large watersheds, like roughly half of the region was covered by 1D BLE data in cycle one. And so that was also the sole data source. Then again, this cycle, we're now supplementing that with Fathom data in the existing flood hazard layer. And so that's why you get the at-risk structure count more than doubling for a significant portion of the region. And on the next slide, I'll kind of zoom in a little bit closer and describe that in further detail.
Can you real quick remind us what we're not supposed to be using the word Fathom anymore. What it's, is it cursory or something?
The cursory data.
Okay.
So this is an example of an urban area where in cycle one, the black data source, NFHL, was the sole data source for this area, and we're only mapping a couple of streams. But then shown in blue, we have our pluvial data sources in cycle two, which are either the cursory data or 2D BLE data that just simply are mapping more streams and showing flood hazard along more streams. Then we have the impacted building shown in yellow. And so a significant portion of these buildings that we flagged in the exposure analysis are shown as inundated due to this pluvial flood risk data. Move to the next slide. So what I've described earlier, we've got tabulated here. So these total exposure metrics include all frequency events up to and including the 0.2% annual chance event across the region. So we see the largest increase in buildings and roadways. And to me, it seems that that's primarily driven by this inclusion of pluvial data, where in urban areas, we only had the NFHL data. Now we're adding that pluvial information, and we see a bit less of an increase in impacted agricultural area because there were large portions of the watershed in cycle one that used the cursory data because there was no other data that was available at the time. Next slide. So this all feeds into, like, the exposure analysis feeds into TAS 3B. We use a lot of those metrics to score HUC 12 watersheds across the region with respect to overall flood risk, as well as like the degree to which we are lacking flood risk knowledge. And so this slide is basically a recap of how we went about the scoring. For flood risk, the two bolded metrics are metrics that we have added from cycle one to cycle two. Just going to take a quick second here to put myself on Do Not Disturb. Okay. Yes, Eugene.
Question, Nick. What's a social vulnerability? I forgot.
So that That is the that's kind of like the resiliency metric that is provided by the Texas Water Development Board that I believe is based on like a community's income levels and various other metrics that kind of dictate how well that specific area can recover from a flooding event.
Okay. And you have agricultural areas. How are the cattle right there? We don't have anything for the cattle because they're two different components right there.
So I believe...
Do you think...
And yeah, Ryan or Jenny, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the agricultural areas that we're including, is that farm and ranch land or is that only farmland?
It includes both.
Okay. So, I mean, that does include ag land, which would account for impacts to livestock to a degree.
So the reason I'm looking at it is this looks like more prone or geared towards more urban areas right there, because if you look at the scoring, agriculture is given only 15%, whereas, you know, you have flood-related fatalities or failing infrastructure. To me, agriculture and cattle ought to be separated out, and they got to weigh more because that has a significant impact on damages within the area right there.
Yeah, so we had presented this this scoring framework in comparison to cycle one, I believe in the September meeting. And so comparing those weightings side by side with cycle one, we did increase the representation of ag areas that are impacted by flooding. But yeah, I mean, I believe we got input from the group at that point in time. And that was one of the pieces of feedback that we received even back in the summer. And so, yeah, maybe moving forward, maybe next cycle, there would be an opportunity to adjust the weighting further if that's something that the group wants to incorporate into the needs analysis.
And can I add one thing?
That base data set, like the agricultural areas, that's something we're actually receiving from Water Development Board, right? It's a data set that we get from them. We're not out there counting acres and cows. Is that correct?
Yeah, I believe it's either a received data set, and that's something that Jenna and Ryan could speak to. I believe y'all developed that data set and provided it to us.
Yes, it's received. TWDB. I don't believe the TWDB makes it. I think it's from a larger national data set, but it is what we're prescribed to use to characterize agriculture.
Yeah, it came from the development board. I don't know who created it. I don't think it was the state that created it. Could have been the USDA or something. But yeah, we didn't go out there and count and measure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do also want to remind everyone that we also are trying to make this match a little bit with the weighting metrics that the state uses for identifying FMEs and FMPs to fund. So we're trying to follow the general trend of that, where they do weight buildings and critical facilities higher than agriculture. And that's just what the state has chosen to do to rank their FMXs. So that's what we're trying to match as well. We didn't want to deviate from that too much, because then there would be like a discord between what we say is high, has a high flood risk scoring versus what's actually going to get funded. I don't want to communicate to a county that you have a really high flood risk score, but then the state doesn't fund anything because we're using different weights and measures.
That's a fair point. Shajith, does that answer your question?
Yes, I think, you know, down the line, we need to look into it, because I think what TWD or whatever national stuff is, that is irrelevant right there. We got to look into to gear towards our specific requirements, which I think, you know, if you club both agriculture to be the agriculture, farmland, and cattle, I think to me this shows to be a little bit more geared against the rural areas. That's what I look at it. So maybe that's something down the line we need to look into it.
I think so.
Yeah,
I
think
go ahead, Alicia.
I was going to say, Ryan makes a fair point, though. I think the bigger issue is to make sure they're awarding the dollars based on that. We can change whatever we want here, but it's not going to change who gets you know, funding. So we need to get it on the downstream end. And that may be something outside of this process to get them to acknowledge. And I know I've heard from UCG too, that, it's, you know, the ledge has definitely expressed interest in making sure we're taking care of those rural needs. So maybe on the funding calculations, they need to be adjusted first before, I think we could make that adjustment and it probably end up penalizing more than it would hurt folks. So
I think there's a task where we can make recommendations back to the state, right, on changes that we want. So I would just write this stuff down and we come back next year. I think it's the end of next year.
Pass it through.
We can pass these types of comments through back to the state to let them know this is a concern for our region. So
thank you.
Go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, we can move on to the next slide. All right, so this slide shows the actual results of our overall flood risk scoring. And so on the left side, we have like that actual score, and we've placed it in buckets that represent like 20th percentile chunks. So we've got the lowest 20% of watersheds in the lighter yellow colors, and we've got the dark red colors showing the watersheds that we've identified as having high overall risk. And so one of the trends that we see, which is shown on the right side of the screen, is comparing back to cycle one, for the most part, about 75% of these watersheds that we identified as having high risk in the first cycle are still identified as being in that top 20% in the second cycle. And what we've seen with the watersheds that are entering that top 20%, for the most part, these watersheds have a high fatality score. So it's somewhat validating to see that one of the recommendations that we received from the planning group was to include that fatality data, and that has flagged some of those HUCs, especially in the Central Texas area, that do have the highest fatality numbers in the region. Move to the next slide. So that was the overall flood risk. When we're looking at knowledge gap scoring, the framework has less that factors into it. But again, this is a recap from what we had previously presented in September on how we planned to run the scoring. So I'll start with the modeling and mapping, and we'll go with discussing the higher need scoring watersheds first. So watersheds received a score of 3 if their only data sources for modeling and mapping was 1D BLE in cursory data. And then watersheds received a score of 2 if they are covered by 2D BLE or regional rain on grid. Also, we could refer to that as like generally low detailed modeling. But then things got a little bit more complicated when assigning scores of 1 or 0, reflecting a relatively low need for additional flood risk information. So the watersheds that received a score of 1 were urban watersheds that only had detailed fluvial data or detailed riverine mapping. And so we identified urban watersheds as those that have some area of an urban or some area of a city with a population exceeding 5,000. And this was kind of a similar criteria that was used for the existing flood hazard area to identify locations that needed to use cursory data to consider the presence of subsurface drainage infrastructure. And so we set that population threshold for consistency is the point of bringing that to this discussion. And so those watersheds, urban watersheds with riverine mapping, received a score of 1. And then the watersheds that received a score of 0 were rural watersheds that had detailed riverine mapping. And so we've included in the scoring table that a score of 0 could be assigned to urban watersheds that have detailed fluvial and pluvial, but while we had some pluvial detailed models identified in the watershed, they didn't have adequate coverage for us to consider any HUC-12, any urban HUC-12 to have both of these types of models. So basically the urban HUC-12s with detailed modeling primarily received a score of 1, and rural watersheds with detailed modeling received a score of 0, just due to them not needing pluvial data to address any information needs. And so that is the modeling and mapping piece. And then we also used Water Development Board population projections to assign multipliers. So what we did was we took watersheds that are projected to exceed a population of 5,000 in the year 2040, and we ranked those by growth. So the watersheds with the highest projected growth got a multiplier of 2, and then the watersheds with no or minimal growth received a multiplier of 1. And so if you move to the next slide, we'll see the results of that analysis. Again, as a reference point, we're including the cycle 1 scoring alongside the cycle 2 scoring. And so in cycle 1, the knowledge gaps were primarily driven by the lack of BLE modeling. And so a lot of those areas that are scoring high just only used cursory data in the first cycle of the regional flood plan. But on the opposite end, the areas of low need, that was primarily driven by the presence of detailed data, which at the time we flagged FEMA data as being detailed and warranting a low flood risk knowledge gap score. So we've changed our perspective from cycle 1 to cycle 2. Now we're not saying that FEMA data or like the presence of that warrants a better score than BLE data. And so for our flood risk knowledge gaps in cycle 2, those gaps are primarily driven by lack of detailed data and high projected population growth. And so overall across the region, we have a greater coverage of BLE data. We have 2D BLE models that are available, and a lot of these areas aren't projecting population growth. So we're saying that we don't really have a significant knowledge gap there. We're flagging knowledge gaps where we're seeing approximate modeling and we're seeing high population growth to account for the fact that, you know, in order to regulate development and to understand, you know, maybe where that should be directed, we need to have a better understanding of flood risk. That's the 2A exposure analysis and 3B needs analysis.
So any questions on their approach and results? Okay, I'll give it over to Rachel. She's going to cover our finalization of the goals that we have.
Good morning, everyone. I am here to talk about task 3C. We talked about this back in June. So just to give you all a refresher, task 3C, as determined by the Water Development Board, is to set goals for this region, specifically identifying specific, sorry. No. Oh, sorry, I thought I heard something. Specific and achievable flood mitigation and floodplain management goals. These goals have to have associated years with them. So there's short-term 10-year goals and long-term or 30-year goals. And we have to identify or recognize any remaining risk once these goals are met. New this year, the Water Development Board put out a list of themes that each goal has to fall into a theme. So we made sure to do that with all of our goals. And just as a reminder, all of the recommended FMXs that we identify in later tasks have to support specific goals. So everything has to tie back to one of these goals that we come up with. If we can go to the next slide. What we've done This cycle is we looked over all of our previous goals to determine if they're still relevant. And the several of our goals had established a baseline as our short-term goal. So figure out essentially what the number would be or what we were trying to identify. We have gone through and eliminated all of those established baselines by actually determining what those baselines should be and looked at what progress we've made since cycle one, which was not that long ago, but we actually showed some progress. So with that, we can go into the goals. There are 10 of them from the previous cycle, so each has been updated. You'll notice on each of these slides, anything in red text is new information or revised. And anything in green are updates to metrics. So one of the things we made sure to do with this goal cycle was give some clarity to some of the goals to support FMXs down the line. The first two goals, first one is increasing the number of counties and communities enrolled in the National Flood Insurance Program. We did have a slight modification to this goal in that we specified a number of counties and communities that we were focusing on. So that number did change a little bit, but our percentage remained the same. We also have increasing number of counties and communities that have adopted higher standards. This is actually really good news on this goal. We had 68 counties and communities identified as having higher standards. And that actually met our first cycle short-term goal of increasing that number by 10%. So our revised short-term goal is to have another 10% of counties and communities have higher than NFIP standards. So good job to the region. any questions on these first two? Okay, we can go into the next. This one you'll see a lot of red on because we wanted to revise the way this goal was worded for clarity and an intent so we could actually measure how we were doing on this goal. So increase the number of cities and counties that have adopted best available rainfall statistics, currently Atlas 14. And we specified this to be specific to the coastal and upper coastal regions where Atlas 14 values actually have a difference from the previous rainfall cycle numbers. So our baseline, instead of establish a baseline, we were able to do a count of how many counties and cities in these two regions utilize Atlas 14. And it's actually at 56% either utilize Atlas 14 or defer to TxDOT, which uses Atlas 14. So our new revised short-term goal is to have 75% of all entities. And then for our long-term goal, we modify that to be entities within the coastal and upper coastal regions have adopted Atlas 15. The intent is Atlas 15 is currently scheduled for release in 2026. So that is a bit of a longer-term goal. I see, Sujith, you have your hand up.
Yes, Rachel. The question is, Atlas 14 or 15, whatever it is for the watersheds, but for the Brazos, it's still the flood frequency governs, correct?
Okay.
Yes, I believe so. Ryan, did I cut you off?
It's not really a community, right? The river is. So these are just communities who are independently doing the river, Suji. So I think we're safe there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Do we need to put a clarification or something?
This is just for, this is about whether cities and counties adopt for regulatory purposes. The Brazos River is kind of its own beast because you're doing a whole different thing. You're doing river hydrology, and I think whenever you study the Brazos, we are using Atlas 14. You just do a bunch of other stuff to reduce that rainfall based off statistics. It's like a whole nother beast. This is just strictly about adopting that as a regulation for development that's happening in your county or city. So I think those are two different things.
Okay.
Charlotte? Oh, sorry. I thought I put my hand down. I was just going to offer exactly what Ryan said, is I think, if a entity wants to use when they actually get down to the modeling level, any sort of regression method to use, you know, real data, gauge data. This doesn't preclude that. It's just to say that if anyone is doing any sort of modeling or efforts or studies using precipitation, we want to use the best available that we know of, right? So this isn't going to preclude what you have your eye on, Sujith. I guess that's all I'm thinking.
Yeah. Thanks, Charlotte.
How did we get to 75%? That seems a pretty big jump from 56% in not a lot of years. Like, if they wanted to feel like they'd already be there, so the next group is probably going to be the harder group to get to comply or agree. I shouldn't say comply. That's a harsh term. So I don't know, Rachel, how did that number come about?
It was a bit of a stretch goal, but we knew we probably couldn't get 100%, but we hoped to get additional participation. So that probably didn't fully answer your question.
I mean, it sounds like we picked something, right? And a stretch goal is fair. I just think generally how these things happen is you get the early adopters, you get sort of the middle adopters, and now we're starting to get into the reticent folks. And so to stretch another almost 20% in 8 years might be a bit much, but I mean, I don't know that it really matters what we write this box, so I'll just leave it at that. We can move on. It comes down to, like, checking the box, we turn something in, doesn't help people get money or not, so moving on.
Sure. I think to just put the put a pin in it, we did go from like 15 cities and counties up to 20, and that's how we went from 56% to 75%. It's kind of how we got that nice like round number. But yeah, to your point, the low-hanging fruit or the ones who were going to do it have probably done it already. I think we can go to the next three goals all tie back to work that was done in task 2A, identification of flood hazard. So the first one is improving safety at low water crossings. I'm going to kind of lump all these three together, but we can go into specifics if y'all would like. The next one was reducing the number of structures that are at risk of flooding during the 1% annual chance event. And the next one was reducing the number of critical facilities that are at risk of flooding. And what we did with this goal was essentially just relook at that baseline. As we discussed with Task 2A and as Nick covered on the exposure analysis, our numbers increased because the floodplain extents changed between cycles 1 and 2 based on these revisions we made to the floodplains. So we have more accurate numbers right now. They definitely look a lot bigger, but what we did focus on this for this goal was just getting a more accurate number for that revised baseline. The next two are increase the accuracy of flood hazard data in the region. Sujith, did you have a question on the previous slide?
Yes. Again, I don't want to beat up on the rural right there because we have a measurable structures and critical facilities. Well, we don't have anything on ag and cattle right there. So I hate to bring this ag and cattle and rural all the time right there because I want the plan to look more holistic for the entire region. But our focus is, I understand, structure, but also we have impacts on the food chain with respect to the ag and the cattle right there. I want to hear if anyone thinks that we got to add on as a goal right there. Granted, you can't go, Ryan can't count all the cattle or the produce right there.
I don't think we have
ag. Yeah, there's some.
I would ask kind of in this space, if you've got cattle in the floodplain, what's the solution look like?
Can I put a pause?
Well,
okay.
So I guess the question is, you know, one, do you throw in another goal? You know, Tim, to your thing, I don't know, just because land's in the floodplain doesn't mean the cattle. I think the first thing, to be fair, we would have to figure out what data sets we have. What can we actually measure? To your point, Sujith, we can't measure cows. People move cows on and off pasture. You know, it would be a little bit easier with cropland, But then we need to even figure out what that means, right? Because rice, to a certain extent, is supposed to be flooded.
Yeah. So I think probably, to me, that there's some logic there. I mean, if you could kind of quantify cropland by, you know, pasture type in the floodplain, very least, then you could do an economic analysis and kind of weigh, you know, kind of the consequences.
Yeah, I think, Tim, what, like, the challenge will be, and I don't know, Ryan, you can speak to sort of timeline, but we need to know what data sets are readily available so that we can actually measure this stuff and go back. And there would be some folks that would say, and by choice, and this is what's done up and down sort of the Mississippi behind the levees, that's where you put your ag and cropland, and knowing that it's at higher risk that it's not there, but it's better than building developable.
Yeah.
So it builds a complexity of, I hear what Sujith is saying. I'm not sure quite yet. I'm not sure how to capture it as a goal. I think it's something we definitely need to keep in the conversation, though, to figure out how do you deal with it?
Yeah. So one thing I guess I'd say is for a different project I worked on, you know, kind of the acreage of, you know, kind of use ag land, you know, I think is actually pretty well established. I mean, it may not be perfect numbers, but reasonable. So those data sets could be available. You know, I do think, you know, I can see some logic behind, you know, trying, you know, having at least some effort to try and understand what's at risk and the consequences. But, I also say, you know, in the balance of how you prioritize, you know, I think it's going to be hard to kind of prioritize large tracts of kind of natural floodplain area that are being, you know, grazed or farmed, you know, against, you know, much more significant infrastructure. You know, so what might prioritize up is still going to be, I think, very challenging, you know, in the ag space, at least, you know, my thinking.
The data set that we have does distinguish between ranch land and agriculture. I don't recall if we go any further into specifics, although I know there are more specific, like it was at rice or whatever, but as far as the data set that we have, I don't know if it does.
That data set does not. There are other available data sets, how they'll coincide with the ag and ranch land we have. I don't know. Are they developed in the same year? That type of thing.
Yeah, it gets into like the different types, rice versus corn or whatever, and then or cotton. And then with ranch land, I mean, they do move cattle. I'm not experienced in that realm, but I do know that they know, like, if it's on the Brazos, they're going to move the cattle away from the Brazos. But so you'd have to kind of quantify and weight those differently. And I get that. This is new, so we'd have to go back and review what our data set is, how do we create a goal for this and incorporate that. So I can't answer these questions today, that's up to y'all.
I'll throw something out and then we'll let Charlotte talk. Maybe instead of worrying about how many cows and how many acres and because you can one season to be this crop or whatever, maybe we look at the state or whoever quantifies agricultural losses within the lower Brazos, and the goal being to reduce agricultural losses. That may be the easier way to go. Let somebody else do the math and figure it all out. And if an area floods, but somebody doesn't consider that a loss, then I don't know what, Karen. I'll flip it to Charlotte there. Go ahead.
Yeah, I know there is a lot to be discussed and ironed out on what the metrics are and how we measure this. But I do want to just express support for what Sujith's offering, rather, that we should have some sort of a goal. And I say that simply because, you know, we went through and changed from 10 to 15% for how we're weighting agricultural flood prone areas. And if we're going to be allotting some sort of weighting, some sort of scoring preference there, then it seems we ought to have a goal to reduce what we're willing to spend money on, right, to help manage that risk. And so I do think we need something to help bring that into alignment with how we're weighting.
Rachel, do you think we could if we could align with one of those themes, an ag goal could meet up with a theme obligation?
I believe so. I have the scope open now.
I bet you we could. I think, I guess I would propose we approve all of these goals and then bring back, I don't know, and revise it the next meeting with this last item. So it gives us some time to go do our homework. And
so, yeah, I think
I just can't answer everyone's questions. I don't know. So I think I think we should, if y'all want us to, we can definitely go back and look and add that goal in for the next meeting.
Let's get through the rest of these and then we can make that as part of a motion and see if that passes to, you know, adopt what's on the screen and then with an additional. Go ahead, Rachel.
Okay. Sorry, I was looking at the list of themes. So, all right, we will circle back to that. The next goal is increase the accuracy of flood hazard data in the region by performing detailed studies. This, the quantifying this ties back to the work that Nick presented on for task 3B. And I apologize that the number was not ready in time for these slides to be posted. But that revised baseline, there are 23,307 square miles in the region that have designated high risk. So our goal is to get that percentage down by 10% for the next cycle is reduce the number of map gaps that that Nick showed on his map for task 3B. And after that is increasing the number of communities with warning and emergency response programs that can detect flood threats and provide timely warning of impending flood danger. For this, we actually looked over counties' hazard mitigation plans, and we found that six of them have those that type of language in their plans. So we want to increase the number of communities by 20%. Sujeet?
One question, Rachel, is, why not we do maybe 80 or 100% given the fact what we have seen recently, the flooding? I think, you know, this is something we got to encourage with what happened. That's a thought, you know, I think we got to aim for 100% by 2033. So that way everyone is aware that the communities can provide and the state, I'm assuming they're going to be funding. But I think, you know, that's one comment I was thinking about. Rather than 20%, we put 100%, where we want to be alerting the public.
Which one are you talking about? Talking about the early warning?
Yeah,
the early warning right there. Mm-hmm. The threats, I think we have it at 20% right now. Why not we have it 100%?
It's certainly a stretch goal, and I mean, I guess we can put whatever.
I think 100%, there's a lot, and even the legislature and the governor's office has agreed that, like, the one-size-fit-all warning situation doesn't work. So I don't know that 100% would ever be the answer, but I agree that 20% is probably drastically under, considering the Water Development Board is currently tasked with hitting everybody who hit declared emergency this last flood cycle and determining and reaching out to those entities. So I would support a short term of 50 and a long term of like 75.
Well, I guess maybe these need to be worded a little bit. Maybe we just quantify the number. We've got six counties. So short term 2033, do we want that to be 12 counties? Or do we want 50% of the counties?
Well, I think even that, a county measurement may not be correct because you can have you have one flood thing in the county and does that check the box?
It's super hard to track all that because, you know, like, Brushy, you know, your district has gate or warning system, but that's not even a city or a county. So now we're talking about levy districts and all this kind of stuff. So we were just trying to focus on counties for the most part. But
Ryan, even though we live in a levy district, the counties typically control it. So I kind of agree with Alicia. I think we got to aim rather than counties or something. Say it's a generic statement, we want to increase it by 50%, and in the long term, whatever it is, got to be done. So at least we have a goal, measurable goal right there that we want to attain that. And in order to do that, the ledge has to fund it. That's the whole purpose right there.
So instead of doing counties, are you saying we do entities? Because that would encompass.
I would suggest that we align this with the task the Water Development Board is currently doing as they were directed at a ledge at a special session. They are currently calculating who needs to have these things. And I think we should align our goal and language with what the Water Development Board is about to produce as a data set and just chop it per Region 8. And then similarly, we could do, I think, higher percentages regardless what that answer is. But I don't know when it's going to be ready. And yeah. So you may have to state that. We like our short-term goal may be like when they get their stuff done. They're supposed to be done in the next couple of months, according to Reem's update. I don't know if you just saw her deal.
But yeah, that was the struggle we have, is that we don't really have a good quantification of who's got these types of systems. No one's done the count, really. We found something that the state did, you know, a while back. But we could.
So, I mean, Rachel could put a placeholder in like we've had before for revised baseline and just say TWDB data set. And short-term goals are to, you know, move the percentages along.
I mean, that was a little bit of a question I guess I have. Is it really every community that needs one? Or, you know, and this is naivety on my part, but, you know, certain communities I think are much more prone, or certain areas much more prone to kind of the flash issue that maybe happened around Kerrville. Mm-hmm. Other areas, the flooding events are much slower developing. You know, the issue I guess I'd see is if you say every community, you know, there's a little bit of concern of a lot of communities might not see that as their priority.
Correct. Yeah, and I think the problem is, like, if you say by county, you have one siren in the county, and do we check it off? So I think we let the Water Development Board develop that baseline that they're going to send forward back to the legislature. These are the communities we think, right? I mean, I think it would make more sense than just trying to count counties. I don't know. Any other thoughts on this one? I think it's an important enough topic that we want to keep it on there. It's just trying to figure out.
You know, in my mind, this concept of trying to understand who, you know, and then track them, you know, to me makes some sense. Now, I don't know if it's really, you know, that straightforward to figure out the who, but if somebody's working on that, who really is most at risk and needs them, you know, to me, it makes sense to kind of roll that into the metrics.
Lee, I see you nodding along. You've read some of that stuff too, of what they're working on, right? Am I capturing that accurately?
Okay, I'm a little caught off guard, but let me collect my thoughts here. So, basically, I'm thinking that y'all are on the right track. And one thing I was nodding about right now is that if the state or somebody is determining who needs and who does not, then the yes, or, you know, is the criteria met, could be met by either having one or being determined by that authoritative source not to need one. And then we're not worried so much about an unattainable goal of 100%, because the communities that don't need one will meet the criteria by being deemed to not need one by the authority, was what I was nodding about. Otherwise, I just love what y'all are saying. Thank you.
I appreciate that.
So we can establish a baseline, I guess. I don't know if the State Development Board will ping us on that, but we can do that, or we can hold it as is and revise next cycle once we get that information. But I almost want to just keep it how it is now, and just so we have that short-term goal of increasing the number of communities. Maybe revise the wording a little bit. We put some numbers on it. We increase the number of communities with programs by 10 or
whatever. Yeah, but it says communities and, again, whatever. Again, at the end of the day, I don't know that it really matters. But
the main goal is just to have this on here so that warning systems can get funded. So
Ryan, the reason is if you put 20%, given what we had last, this July, I think we're trying to sell ourselves short right there. I don't want criticism down the line. When we put, if you put a percentage, then we got to be higher than that one. Or maybe you can say increase the number of communities with programs by more than 20% or something. But I like the idea of what Alicia said, 50%. We got to aim high right there, because this is a key issue for all of us right down the line. So if you put 20%, that's kind of a low to me.
So I guess maybe a short-term goal is, you know, quantify the number of flood early warning systems throughout the region, and then long-term, we increase that by a certain percentage.
I think it's...
Maybe real quick, I'll put a thought out there. you know, I appreciate this comment about how the 20%, you know, potentially perceived. You know, what I kind of sense is going on maybe is that, you know, that 20%, you know, kind of in parentheses, if you were really qualifying kind of a to be determined high percentage of those needing, you know, it's kind of what we're after. We don't know how to measure that yet or track it, but, you know, I think we're trying to get to, you know, a fraction, you know, that definitely need it, and we want it to be a high percentage of those who actually need it.
Yeah. So I think this 100% aligns with what Water Development Board is doing with SB3. Like, that's exactly what they're doing. The board shall identify each area in a flash flood prone area that has a history of consistent severe flooding based on the history, blah, 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 and needs systems. Like, this is exactly what they're doing. I think we align, because to Tim's point, not everybody needs these things. If you're not in that kind of flooding environment, I think my recommendation on this one is, however we can make a note that we align this with SB3 over time, we do, and we limp along in the meantime, instead of us trying to make our own data set and talk about it.
And maybe we put a comment in there that our intent is to really, you know, drive to a high percentage of those who need.
Yeah, versus just a high percentage, period. So I don't know what you can do with that, Rachel, but it may just need to be a bunch of notes of goo, you know, that this is about the best we can do right now, but we want to align with what the legislature, the water board's working on, so that we get a high percentage of those who need. And so we can change the percentages up, but we need to just change what the actual we're counting to match up with what they're going to produce. Does anybody object to that concept?
How about, Alicia, how about this one, align with TWDB, something like that, if we can put it in on short term. So if they come up with, if they need 10% or 20 or something, or maybe 40, I'm not talking about the communities, on the areas right there. So if they come up with that, we align with our goals to comply with what has been done by TWDB.
If they establish, they could approach it different ways. They could say, this is all the communities that need early warning system. There's 30 of them. Then maybe we would just base the percentage off of that. 50% short term, 100% long term, or something like that.
I think something like that is fine. Is there anybody objects to where we're going and just trust our consultants to kind of clean that up? I don't see any objections. So I think we're going to just tweak it. We're close. We're going to raise the percentages overall. We're going to change the base data set to match up with what Water Development Board defines as need.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Good questions of discussion. Thanks, everybody. Sorry, Rachel. Yeah,
I appreciate that. No, it's great discussions. No need to apologize. There's only two left, I promise. And this one, the next one is actually very much tied to the discussion that we just had, which is a general increase the number of flood gauges in the region. Part of why we wanted to include this is because there are some FMXs coming up where entities want to get funding to put flood gauges up. So we wanted to make sure we had a goal that tied back to that. We did work this cycle to establish that baseline. We focused on, sorry for the formatting here, but a count of USGS gauges as well as those operated by flood control district. I know that's not inclusive of everything in the region.
What does that mean? Is it stream gauges, rain gauges? What
stage? Stream level. Mm-hmm.
So just stream. Okay.
Yeah.
Some of them are like composite gauges. So, but as a base, I think they're all stream gauges, if I recall. Flood control and USGS gauges is where we pulled from. Because like Brian's got a bazillion gauges, but they're not like, that's in their own internal database. And we didn't count them because we didn't know how many
they were. I just wanted to know what we're measuring. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Our goal for the short term has been revised from establish a baseline to the work that the team did in cycle one is part of task 12. Looked at potential areas to add new flood gauges. So we said, let's try to add 2 new flood gauges by 2033 and then continue to add gauges in the long term. And then the last goal is increase public outreach education programs. We revised the word activities to programs to be more specific. Throughout the region, and a short-term goal would be to have 1 community-hosted educational program, and then long-term would be 2. These are, as a note, outside of the ones that are mandated by the NFIP. So we wanted to include a public outreach goal and make sure that entities had availability to submit FMXs for that. Did you have a question?
That was going to be a question. Is it a fundable task as what? A strategy?
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of their category.
Okay.
But strategies.
So somebody could get money. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm putting a goal in here and you can't even get funded. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. And there was specifically one entity who had a goal or had an FMS of having public outreach. So we want to make sure to capture that. So that is all I had. I appreciate the great discussion. So I will.
We've got two goals that we need to revise. I don't know if it really matters. Do we just wait to vote on this in December? I don't know.
Yeah, we could vote on it in December.
We just don't go through everything. We just go back to these two.
Correct.
Have them all listed. Only cover these two, and then we'll vote on them all then.
Or y'all could vote to approve with those two changes, but that might be difficult to word. I don't know. Whichever.
Do y'all want to see this again, or do you want to try to make a Christina?
So could we make a motion to approve them now as is, with the exception of the two per our discussion, and bring those ones back next month?
That might be easiest.
So, and I think it's really not two per our discussion. It's one per our discussion, and the ad, because the ag one doesn't. Right. So. Yes, we could take a motion to just approve as presented with the modifications to whichever one that was.
Flood warning systems.
And number eight.
Yeah. So with the noted changes to number eight and a request to bring back an additional goal next month to address the agricultural thing. Christina, are you making that motion?
I'll make that motion.
I'll second that motion. So we have a motion and a second to adopt all the goals as is, with the exception of modifying goal eight based on the discussion and bringing an additional goal for consideration next month regarding ag. All in favor say aye. Any opposed? Hand signs,
aye.
Whatever. Mm-hmm. Any opposed? Further discussion? Seeing none. Thank you. Great discussion, folks. I appreciate it. We'll see you next month, Rachel.
Yeah, thanks, Rachel.
Or you can punt, whatever.
Thanks, all.
All right, Jenna, you're up.
Okay, quick update on task 4A. We brought y'all a summary of what we've identified so far last month, and just giving a quick update on that on the next slide, if you don't mind. So this is the same thing as we presented last month. The main thing is we did provide a supplemental handout that lists the FMXs as received. I just want to emphasize again, we are still coordinating with these communities. You'll see there's been some slight shifts in numbers since last month of us talking to communities and them realizing their project, you know, doesn't have enough information to really be an FMP, so it needs to be an FME, or maybe they need to combine ideas into one regional project instead of little baby projects. But this is what we have so far. It's what we'll include in the tech memo. These are not, doesn't mean they're approved by the group or anything. It's just a list of here's what people are interested in. And then early next year, y'all will have the chance to really filter through those one by one and decide y'all want to recommend them or not.
These are the new ones. These aren't the full list.
Correct. This is just what we've received right now. The full list will be attached as well from everything we have from last cycle. Those will still carry over into this cycle. But the 98 new FMX requests are what we've received this cycle.
The tech memo will have the full list. How many are we sitting on that? Like several hundred?
Yes.
Yeah. So when y'all get the tech memo, y'all will have the full list of all the FMXs that are being proposed to be evaluated under task five. Mm-hmm. So.
Sujit,
is that clear? Yeah.
Sujit,
I have a question. You know, because looking at the FMX on the supplemental handouts, I have a question. We're supposed to be in the regional flood planning group, but there are certain requests by communities for maintenance projects. So that's what I'm surprised. If there's an erosion or something, we're looking at the totality of a regional floodplain, but not fixing their maintenance issues, which should have been addressed. So I don't know why we need to add those FMX with the maintenance problems.
So that's what we're working on right now, is filtering through those. We had approved that matrix for how to determine what's infeasible, what doesn't actually match with our regional flood planning goals. So this is a list of what people submitted to us. So some people did submit us items that don't really fulfill that regional flood plan goal and the strategy, what we're going to do here. So we're going back to them, letting them know, hey, these are our criteria we need to meet, and your items are not meeting those. So be classified as infeasible, but we just want to verify that we didn't misunderstand what you're trying to do, and we aren't filtering out something just due to miscommunication. So that's what we're working on, and then running them through that matrix. Again, this isn't saying y'all recommend these items.
I think it's just a list, a raw list, right? They need to process it.
Yeah, this is, if y'all remember, this is called potentially feasible. We're going to go in task five to see if they're feasible or not. And some of these are like, they called it maintenance. I think College Station had one where they called it maintenance, but it's actually like going in and doing some heavy channelization and regrading. So and that's why at this point we haven't looked at in like at a granular level to see, is this just mowing grass or is this actually going out there and needing money to clean out and widen a channel? Those are just things we haven't gotten to yet. And that will come next year with task five, whenever we dig into all of these very more deeply. So.
Did that answer your question, Sujith?
Well, the question, Alicia, is we don't have unlimited funds for the consultant to go and review all of them. But, you know, if there is a specific, like I'm a City of Sugar Land resident and your volume increases because of Atlas 14, so at least you have some protection, not the Delta right there, but we have other regional requirements. Or in terms of the lids right there, that one of the question was that, what is that amount of time and manpower required with the portable pumps right there? Come on, these are the stuff I think, you know, better served when Ryan Inc. can go and do some projects so that we can at least put them on the ground rather than continuously do the study process. That's what my comment was.
Okay, but as far as a public process, somebody could have turned something in and said, I need more turtles and ducks, and we would have took it and put it on the list. And now we run it through the flow chart, the matrix, to go, we can't sponsor that, right? So they just have it.
Fair enough. Filter
that you're thinking of. If somebody turned it in, we have to acknowledge it, and that's what that is that raw list. It'll go on a diet and get some recategorized.
I think we did do some filtering of ducks and stuff like that. I think it was like, if it was obvious, we did include it.
it should look better when it comes back to you, Sujith. Yeah. More in line with
your. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, like this is not.
Thank you.
This is actually just supposed to get in front of the development board so they can see what we're pulling in. Task five is when we start cleaning this stuff up for everybody. So.
All right.
Next slide. And then, so the technical memorandum, if you go to the next slide, because we had this last minute pivot on the flood quilt, it held up all of our tasks, really task 3B and 2B. So we were hoping to get y'all the technical memo this meeting, but we've had to push it. We have it drafted. And we're just doing some review. So my plan is to submit to the tech draft memo to y'all individually tomorrow for y'all to review. And then, so Pam will send that out. And then I would like to get comments back from y'all individually so y'all don't violate any type of Open Meetings Act rules. So y'all can take a review over the next 2 weeks. I know Thanksgiving is next week, but you'll have 2 weeks to review it. And y'all can provide comments back. We'll address it so that we can by the 12th. So we would need y'all's comments back. No, sorry, we need the comments back from y'all on the 4th. And then we will submit that back to y'all and post it publicly on December 12th. So that will be ready for December 18th meeting for y'all to vote on it. I don't want to make this a bigger deal than it needs to be. The technical memo is really just a progress report for the development board to make sure that we're making progress and that we're doing things in a way that they're they anticipated or we're following their guidelines. So it's just kind of a report card on where we're at. So we're not finalizing anything really. I mean, the things that you're finalizing are the things you've already approved through y'all's meetings. So this is just making sure that y'all agree with the progress that we've made and that y'all are okay with submitting it to the development board. It doesn't really finalize anything. So that's kind of the game plan. Like I said, tomorrow, submit to y'all. Y'all have 2 weeks to submit comments back to us. And then we'll make any major revisions by December 12th, and then y'all can vote on it December 18th. Hopefully by December 18th, there's no major changes, so we can have an approval with potentially minor revisions, and that would preclude us from having to meet again before January 7th, because it is due to the development board on January 7th. So does that work for everybody?
Well, we have a choice, right?
Yeah, I know. We're kind of backed into a corner with the flood quilt. It wasn't ideal, but I think this still works. Yeah. So
next one.
All right, next slide. And then you go to the next slide. Again, December 25th meeting, we'll talk about final tech memo. And then time permitting, I guess we'll bring goals back then as well, those two additional goals. And then we'll talk about Task 4C and 5B, which is the performance of FMEs. We talked about this before, since this is what we want to get started pretty heavily next year. So I want to have a game plan December and be ready to kick all this off in January and February. So that's where our focus will shift next year, is performance of these things. And I'm excited to do it because we're going to be able to actually put some dollars to work to actually get some studies done that will be a benefit to the region. So that's the game plan for the next two meetings, which I don't know if we have. Okay, so February, we could potentially have a meeting in February, but we might want, I don't know, we haven't thought about that.
We need at least a January or February meeting, most likely. Yeah. So we might not need both.
Maybe we can talk about it in December. We'll make a recommendation.
Yeah, because I think we have to adopt a calendar. Don't we normally adopt
that first? Whenever our first meeting is.
So we'll come up with a game plan on meetings for January and February.
Okay.
On the December meeting.
Okay.
Any questions? No.